This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on September 6, 2012. Tonight we're talking to Josh Twist. He's on the Azure team and just launched Azure Mobile Services. Can you tell us about yourself, Josh?
Yeah, hi. So my name is Josh Twist, and I'm a program manager on the Azure Application Platform team is the full title. So I work in Windows Azure, and I've been working for about 10 months around that time on this thing called Mobile Services, formerly known as Zumo. And we just shipped, so I'm pretty excited to be talking to you guys and drilling into and explaining to Kevin, who's pretty unfamiliar with it, I believe. So having some fun with you guys talking about it.
So what led you, had you been at Microsoft for a while? Is this a new thing for you? What kind of led you into working on this?
So brief history of time is I worked for Microsoft in the UK for about 4 years, starting in 2006 as a consultant with services. So, you know, I was a hired gun, would go in and do development consulting with businesses. And then I thought I should try some time in the mothership, you know, try out working in Redmond. So I took a job as a program manager with the workflow team. And I was there for about a year. And my last duty for those guys was at the Build conference, talking about their workflow service. And then I was presented an opportunity. There was something of a little bit of a reorg, and that always presents opportunities for PMs and staff here in the product groups. And someone said, would you like to go and do some mobile stuff? Are you interested in this mobile space? And, you know, I was, yep, hands clapped together, quite excited, love to go and explore that space and see what we can do, really, to make Azure. So the kind of loose goal at that point was, let's find a way of making Azure more compelling, even more compelling to mobile developers. That was it. It was really open. So I had this great sort of startup vibe, go and solve this problem, have a think about that space, start from scratch. It was very cool.
So you mentioned Zumo there. So that was the code name then for this?
Yeah, so it was Project Zumo was our code name. And we became very attached to it. We have a little brand and a little logo, which is a Z in a box with horns. And I can't explain it other than it looks cool. We should add a picture of that to the post that accompanies this. And the name, unfortunately, isn't particularly exciting where it comes from, even though it sounds pretty cool. The ZU is from Azure and the MO is from mobile. And we were trying to brainstorm some code names. And one of the guys I was working with came up with a list. And I saw Zumo and I'm like, that's it. That's the name.
So you mentioned kind of a startup feel. Was it a small team or, you know, what was this? Did it grow over time? What was it like?
Very much so. I mean, there's a couple of ways that the word startup pops up. So we were a tiny team at the time. It was kind of me. I was the only full-time person on the project. And there was no dev or test resource at that point, really. And my manager and we had this other pretty senior, very smart guy at setting up a business case working with us. And we started from there, really. So we started to explore the space. And actually, first thing we did was try and get ourselves into the mindset of the modern app developer, right? If I'm targeting mobile, we're thinking about apps. And so we did a bunch of stuff. I think my favorite part of that conception process of conceiving and setting up the project was going to a bunch of hackathons and sitting down with developers and trying to code, you know, over 2 days and build apps and just try and understand what it's like to be out there and building on iOS and Android and Windows Phone and trying to get into that mindset. So the other way that startup came into that is you suddenly find you're in this world of startups because there's such an overlap between the world of app builders and startups. The vast majority of people we're talking to, or a very large proportion anyway, was either a 10-person company in a loft in San Francisco or one guy in a garage. And I had great fun driving around the Washington area, meeting these little guys. I remember one visit, two guys who had a gorgeous office on Lake Sammamish here in the sort of Redmond area. And they were just sat there with the computers up looking out over Lake Sammamish, coding away, living the dream, building the app that was going to be the next Instagram.
So when this went live, I remember Steve Sanderson tweeting and saying that this was something he worked on. And what was his role or what was he involved with?
So Steve worked as a developer on the project. I'm sure everyone knows Steve for his awesome JavaScript skills. And so our portal, the actual user interface that you interact with in Windows Azure Management is a pretty hefty piece of JavaScript. And so we were very lucky to have the superpowers of the Sanderson deployed to building our website.
Okay. So I guess to kind of step back, you mentioned, you know, the focus was to improve the mobile development experience. But then, and you're talking about, you know, iOS and Android, as well as Windows Phone and Windows 8, could be either.
Yeah, so I mean any platform, and I should explain that we just released the public preview, and today the public preview, we only support Windows 8, so that is the the well-known desktop client that Microsoft just shipped, but that's a point in time story. We're going to add more platforms over time, including iOS and Android and Windows Phone, and maybe even more, like HTML and JavaScript is also openly being discussed. But I guess coming back to, sorry, I sort of told the story of we started this investigation and did a lot of reach out. And then let's fill in the gap between where we ended up when we shipped the public preview. We basically found, as we spent a lot of time with developers, that there was three personas or three categories of developer. Because all the time we're meeting these guys and we're watching them build apps and we're asking them about the apps they're building. We're also saying, you know, what is your back end? Do you need cloud services? If so, what are you doing? What do you need? Are you using Azure? If not, why not? And these three personas started to emerge all by themselves. And the first, I wouldn't be surprised if someone on the call falls into this category, actually, is the hobbyist app developer, right? So this guy, he's not paid to build this app. He has a day job. He's not quit his job yet to work on this thing. He's hoping he's going to make some money on it. Maybe his dream is that he will make enough money to pay for his coffee. Maybe he thinks he's going to get lucky and have that next Instagram, but he still works a day job and he does it for fun. I mean, we know a stack of people here just down the corridor in the building I work in at Microsoft who have apps just like this, and that's what they do for fun. They build apps. We found a lot of people who fall into that category. And when we asked them about backends, we found... I guess it seems kind of intuitive now that these guys have a limited amount of time to spend building an app, right? They have a very limited resource in terms of time. A lot of them might have families, or they want to have a social life beyond work and building apps. So they're going to spend that time wisely. And they perhaps have to go and learn how to code Objective-C if they're building an iOS app, or learn the Cocoa framework, or maybe they're building Windows Phone, have to go and learn Silverlight. And we found that they all wanted back-end features like authentication, for example. Or structured storage, or the ability to send push notifications, because you need some kind of cloud component or some kind of service component to send a push notification. But we found time and time again that they were kind of saying, well, I've got this limited amount of time to spend, and that is a big problem. Like building out a backend as powerful as the Microsoft toolset is and other toolsets are, as powerful as Azure is, there's a lot of work to do to actually glue all those things together, you know, to just pull those threads like authentication and compute and storage and hook them all up is probably hundreds to thousands of lines of code. And so they're kind of going, well, I'm not going to spend my time on that. I'm going to spend my time on my client mm-hmm. application, because I've got to prioritize.
Yeah, if I can interrupt just for a second, this really hits close to home. And I'm sure a lot of, you know, people listening maybe have the same experience, but I am. Previously, I worked with Jesse Liberty, who's on the Windows Phone team, and we both needed to write some, samples and tutorials and things. And we thought that, why don't we try and just build an app and do something real world? So mm-hmm. we said he would write a Windows Phone app, I would write an MVC backend, and then, we tried some different data services, and we ran into all the things you're talking about. I mean, I'm pretty good with MVC, but there's still some frustrations in communicating from, mobile to a back end with authentication, authenticated data services. I was surprised how quickly, things got complicated.
Right.
And, you get past this, like, oh yeah, we'll just do this and we'll add this feature to anything you want to do is a nightmare.
Right. And the sad thing is you're writing a lot of code that isn't necessarily attributing value to what you're trying to achieve. You just feel like you're writing this, this code to integrate these pieces and mm-hmm. to pull various services together or mash up with some other service. We heard that time and again. And actually, interestingly, so I work on the Azure team, which is full of hardcore backend developers. It's what they do. They write the OS that runs the fabric of a cloud, a cloud system. And one of them, who's a friend of mine, I was talking to him about the project, and I asked him about his app. I knew he had an app. And I said, so have you got a backend? He went, nah, I kind of didn't want to spend time doing that. I wanted to focus on that. I'm like, well, you're a backend developer. What do you mean? He's like, yeah, I just kind of wanted to do the client. So as a pitch, the idea of, of mobile services, or Zumo at the time, to him, his eyes started to light up. So he's kind of the third persona. So the first persona sounds like you guys maybe fell into that. And you tick the box. You just, that conversation is completely the conversation we had time and time again. Mm-hmm. And then the middle persona, the next guy along, is a client-focused developer. And the key thing that separates him from the first is he has quit his job to work on this app. His livelihood, he pays his mortgage as a result of the success of these apps he's working on. And it might be one guy, as I mentioned, in a garage, or it might be one of those guys who's 10 people in a loft in San Francisco. What we find with this audience is they have a similar reticence. They want the back-end features we're talking about. They really, really want them. But they're reluctant, and they're reluctant for different reasons. Now, they maybe have more time to spend, but these guys, they're so focused on building an awesome client experience. It's kind of a, they're just so passionate that the feel, the look, the behavior of the app has got to be superb and compelling, that they're going to spend as little time on the back end as possible. They're just going to do the bare minimum. And the other concern they have is that if they don't invest significantly in the back end, are they going to get the reliability and high availability they need? Because remember, these guys, they're betting their livelihood on this application. And if you add a back end to that, then that thing better be, you know, have a good SLA, better be standing up for a long time. They don't want to be concerned about that. And so if they've integrated all these pieces together themselves, they're concerned about that. They're concerned about the underlying capability of a service provider that might offer something here. And so that was interesting. We saw yet another segment of people who want back end features, but have this reluctance. And the third persona is the veteran back-end developer. Now, actually, when I present this, I quite often talk about these three personas, and we usually have a picture of Scott Goo representing the last. So I'm guessing your listenership will probably know who the Goo is, right? We have a picture of him representing the last guy. So this is someone who, if he's building apps today, he's probably doing it from a perspective of he's got a bunch of web services, or he's already got a website, and he's adding a companion application for it. In any case, he's not scared of adding a back end. He's not reticent to do it. He's quite happy in that space. He loves it. He maybe even already loves Windows Azure as well. And so at this point, we're like, well, that's interesting. So we looked into it and we said, well, we're already doing a pretty good job with respect to persona number three. Because when we asked them about Azure and back ends, like, oh, we love building services. And if anything, some people had a reaction to Azure because to them, they maybe weren't Microsoft-focused developers, particularly in the iOS and Android crowd at that point. And they saw Azure as not being equally open as some other cloud providers, perhaps. Like, maybe we didn't do Node.js, or we didn't do PHP historically, or we didn't run Linux. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard, but Azure is already pounding on that. Like, we run Node, we run PHP, we run Java, we do everything the other guys do, and we do more, and in many cases, we do it better. So we sort of thought, well, it feels like we're doing a good job of looking after persona number three. So with mobile services or with Project Zumo, what can we do to make it turnkey for those two personas to actually not remove the cloud from the equation? You know, give them the features they want and make it easy. And that was really the essence of where Project Zumo began. And that was the mantra for the team. You know, this idea of simplicity with enablement. So we wanted it to be really, really simple. But as we started to design it, we should talk about some of the features that people were asking for in a second. But as we started to design it, we realized that we could build this policy-based system that was like sticking Lego bricks together and almost like a toy. And we realized that it would be awesome at whichever scenario we focused on. So if we focus on a particular scenario, we can do an awesome job. But in doing that, we'll close out all the other scenarios. So instead we said, well, we don't think of our developers as being stupid. These two personas aren't bad developers. They're probably very good developers. They just don't want to spend a lot of time on, or a lot of time learning or worrying about building out this back end. So we need to enable smart developers to do this really quickly and easily. And so if ever you watch any mobile services presentation, you'll probably hear the word in minutes time and time again. So we want people to be able to get started and have a back end up and running and working against their application in minutes.
So say, for instance, I'm not sure what to pick an example. Let's say I've got a social game and I want to be able to invite friends to play a game against them, and I want to track my score, you know, and that high scores and that kind of thing.
So that's great, actually, because that's interesting. So a couple of things there. You've got identity. You want people to be able to log into the system so you know who someone is, that when they come back the next time, you know who their friends are, right? You probably want some kind of structured storage in order to store the information that represents the games and the users and whatever else is going on there. So you mentioned like scoreboards, etc., etc. So you want some kind of storage that isn't just a bunch of files, that is something you can query and sort and page and filter, that are all the things that any kind of developer really needs if they're going to put data up in the sky. And actually, corollary to that as well, if you're building a modern app that runs on iOS or Android or Windows Phone or Windows 8, you're also going to want these push notifications, right? You're going to want to send, so let's say you're building something like a Scrabble turn-based word game. Probably get the idea of what I'm talking about. Alec Baldwin really likes this sort of thing. I hear rumors of, you know. Then, you know, you're going to want all those features, and then when I take my turn, you want a push notification that gets to your phone, even if you're not using the application, that tells you, hey, Josh has taken a turn. It's your turn now, John. And so that's a very good scenario. Mobile services is great at that kind of thing now. And so I've mentioned three key features: the authentication, structured storage, and push. And one way you could build an app like this, right, is that we give you a very simple data head in the sky. You could think of this just being an API that does CRUD, and you put most of the logic on the client device. And that's really attractive to us when we were designing Project Zumo, because it allows people to focus where they want to. They can spend all of their time in the client app. They do very little in the back end. So that was attractive. But even with a game like this Scrabble, this fictional, unheard of Scrabble game we're talking about, we ran into problems when we tried to model that. Like, for example, you can't put the validation and the security into the client application. I mean, that's just naive, right? Because my manager here is the GPM of Windows Communication Foundation, and he likes nothing more than looking at what's going on over the wire, and he's going to be looking at the wire format from his phone and cheating and inserting all kinds of crazy Ukrainian words that I you know, he's just going to cheat his way through. Or worse still, maybe he'll just find out what the table structure is and start scanning the table and pulling out all of the user information and email addresses. So you really need some kind of security story and some way of writing authorization policy. And this is one of the places where we started to investigate Lego bricks. You know, can we give people just simple Lego bricks and they can snap them together, but they can only snap them together the way we've designed? And we decided that was a bad idea as well. And so this is where we came up with the idea of letting people write the code they want to write. So we're all developers, we all love writing code, but we hate writing the infrastructure code that you talked about before. And so one of my favorite feature of Zumo, actually, of mobile services, is the ability to write scripts that execute securely on the server. But these things are short, they're written in JavaScript, and we do all of the legwork for you. So we have a data API, so you can work with data in a CRUD fashion. And actually, in case I forget, you should ask me about how we make that more fun through schematization as well. So we have a SQL Server backend running in Azure, so it's great for structured storage. And as you're inserting and reading and updating data, you can write these little bits of JavaScript that intercept those calls and do stuff. So you write a JavaScript function on insert, for example, and the function has parameters item, so that's the thing that's being inserted, user, and we've authenticated the user for you. You didn't have to do anything. You just have to give us a little bit of configuration when you create your app. We'll take care of getting the user signed in, of passing them an authentication token back. And so at that point, you're just presented with this user object that you can trust. So it's all done for you in the service.
So from that then, and I looked at a little bit, you know, obviously before the call, but from that I saw things where you're accessing that, like, say, for instance, user.id.
Yes.
And so an authenticated user, you have an ID and you can work with them and you don't have to do anything. If I can ask, you know, while we're on this, what sort of authentication story is there? I'm sure there's Windows Live ID. Are there other, you know, authentication mechanisms, OAuth or anything like that?
So today I mentioned that for our public preview, which we launched last week, we only support Windows 8. And as part of that, we only support Windows Live. However, that is a very short-term story for us. We'll add support for other identity providers. And we're really landing some of the details of how we can make that super enabling so that you can, you know, support any OAuth flow potentially, et cetera, et cetera. But you can certainly expect to see more key identity providers, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, showing up very soon.
Okay.
So that's kind of the authentication side of it. The last parameter on our scripts is the request object. And that allows you to control the flow of what's going to happen. So really what mobile services is allowing you to do is to write very, very simply a really slick JSON API, because you can control the request and you can send back a response that says 400, you can't do that. 403, you can't do that. That's forbidden. And you can literally just code that in, request.respond, send back any kind of response you like to the client and not proceed. Or you can say request.execute And we'll go ahead and run the insert to the database or the query or whatever it is. And then you can have a function run when we've finished and just before we send it back to the user. So what's very common is if you're building out an application scenario, when someone inserts, say, on a location app, inserts a check-in, then you can write just a few lines of script that's going to insert the data and allow the data to go into the database. And on the way back, it's going to send a push notification out to all of your friends. So it runs another query against the data structure to say, well, what is this guy's, who's in this guy's friends group? Let's go and send them a push notification. And if you watch some, you know, maybe we can put some links on the post to some of the videos we have, you'll see how you can do that. And, you know, it's less than 10 lines of code, including braces, to achieve that scenario in mobile services.
Yeah, and this is one of those frustrating points in a audio podcast talking about code, but it really, I watched the Cloud Cover show you were on last week.
Okay, yeah, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and so the experience there inside the new Azure portal, you're clicking through and then you click on one of these functions and then you have an in-browser JavaScript editor.
Yep.
That's really nice looking. I mean, I don't know, is it like a code mirror or something similar to that?
It's similar. It's built in-house. It has a really slick set of capabilities. And so you've seen you get bracket completion. And if you click on a word, you'll get highlighting of other words that are the same. So you get this keyword highlighting. At the moment, you get a simple kind of symbol-based IntelliSense where it'll just spot other words. But within a few months, we will actually add full IntelliSense to that. That will allow you to explore our APIs, right? A lot of us developers don't want to go and read the manual. We like to just press a dot and then go, what does this thing do? And what does that thing do? And we'll have that support right there in the browser. And we have full syntax highlighting, et cetera, et cetera. Other cool thing is, right, even right now, we actually spot errors. So if you do something crazy and your script's just not going to work, then we'll know that's the case and we'll warn you. Or if you create the wrong signature for the function, we'll warn you and you won't be able to save that script. So yeah, our editing experience is a lot of fun, actually. It's quite fun developing that.
So we've got JavaScript, but this is server-side code, right? This is running mm-hmm. up in the service. Is this like Node.js or is it some other kind of environment?
Yeah, no, so it's Node.js. So, I mean, we don't kind of push that into your face that, hey, this is Node, you have to go and learn Node, because you really just have to learn JavaScript.
Right.
But if you, simplicity with enablement, right? If you love your Node, then you can go and require modules. And we've included a few modules, like my favorite one for doing HTTPs in the request from Mikhail is in there. So if you want to go and mash up with other services, and I just wrote a sample that calls the Bing image search API and uses an image from that, et cetera, et cetera. So you can really go and explore the possibilities of mashing up with other services using HTTP, calling push notifications. And we're actually looking at ways of allowing you to choose what modules you want in your runtime as well. We don't support that right now, but hopefully we'll have that capability very soon.
Wow. Okay, so I think you were walking me through a scenario and I kind of...
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing my best to distract you.
We were doing words with Zumo.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we talked about authentication. So you configure your app up, do live. And I guess we kind of jumped to the obvious thing is that in order to build all the authorization and validation logic you want, then you can do that in those server-side scripts. And so there's a couple of benefits to that. One, the code is secure. It's not running on the client. Two is, as we add support for other platforms, you only really have to write a lot of that code once, right? You don't have to write a lot of the double checking. You just have to keep the user interface nice and clean. And it's security in terms of helping people not do the wrong thing rather than trying to prevent them. You only have to write all that code once because it lives up in the server. And that's really, we've landed it, right? I from the tools I've told you there, you need to decide what tables you want. You plug into Windows Live right now and your Windows 8 app. You write scripts. Those scripts can send push notifications. The only thing you have to do now, John, is go and build that client application that shows a Scrabble board. And that's really what we're all about, is getting people to achieve what they want to achieve in terms of their app building, add the back end, and do that, you know, it kind of in minutes. So we just built, in fact, there's a sample. Again, maybe we can get the link on the post.
Definitely.
There's a sample I worked on. We called it Do2, which is to do, but the letters are the other way around. I don't have a good story for that. It's just what I called it. And it's the idea is that my wife, I always pick on my wife whenever I talk about Zumo. If you saw the where she got accused of being an alcoholic in the Cloud Cover show, was
right,
a,
I did.
A low point of our marriage, I think. My wife, she gives me a lot of lists, right? And pick this up. She gives me a post-it note or whatever on the way out to the office. Pick this up on the way back. And I'm like, man, I'm working on this mobile space. We've got to have a mobile solution to this. I want an app that is a to-do list app that me and my wife can share stuff on. And we had a look around. And I'm sure there's probably something out there in the bazillion to-do lists. But I wanted something really simple. Because my wife isn't a big technology person. You know, she's not really into it. And I don't want any configuration options or management systems or tagging. She wants to create a list. She wants to share it with me. And the stuff's on the list or it's off the list. It's either on it or off it. It doesn't have a complete state and hang around. And I thought, well, I can build this and I can build a backend in mobile services. So I set about doing this. And it's actually a complex adventure to build a secure application that achieves social scenarios, understands sort of friend graphs, manages the interaction between friends. Like, I get sent an invite, I accept or reject the invite. There's a lot of stuff to think about, but I genuinely built the whole back end for that application in hours. Now, the client was a different matter. It took a while to build the client, that's just because there was a lot of work to do in terms of finishing the UI, making it look good and feel good. But I really felt, yep, we've kind of got mobile services to a great start, and that I genuinely had a lot of this stuff to do. If I'd gone and built this using raw pieces and components, I'd have spent probably as long on the back end as I had to spend on the front end, which wasn't what I wanted to do. And I felt pretty good about that. That sample's actually available, so it's available on the code gallery. So we'll put a link to that.
So then as I'm accessing the data inside my client application, I'm making a call to, you provide a library that I say, you know, my data or app dot whatever, and then I do queries and updates and things on data object.
Yep. We really wanted to keep it simple. We have a SQL backend, so we wanted to kind of expose the power of SQL. Another thing I will say actually about that, just going off on a slight tangent, is we realized people didn't want to take on a bunch of new tools. So you can work with SQL, perform most of the most common functions against SQL right in the portal. So you can create columns, we should talk about that in a minute. You can delete columns, you can set indexes without having to open SQL Management Studio. And I have lost my thread, John. What was your question that I wandered off on?
Just the client-side libraries. Like,
yeah.
And so I'm guessing, like right now you're saying it's Windows 8, but I'm assuming probably a similar feel across the different platforms eventually, right?
Very much so, actually. We really want it to feel native to that. To that platform, so iOS should feel natural for an iOS developer when we do our Objective-C SDK, etc. And for C Sharp, we use Link for building queries, right? Because that's what a lot of people think about if they're writing code in C Sharp now. Mm-hmm. And for our JavaScript client, for the Windows 8 JavaScript client, we have a new JavaScript link. If you know, it's not something we've seen out there in the wild before, but actually it works pretty well for advanced scenario. But we also support a JSON query language, so you can kind of query by example. But we've pulled an analogy again to what you're working with. So you think about it, you have a bunch of tables in your SQL database. And you can create those tables with a click of a button and add policy over them right in the Azure portal. And so what you do is you create a new mobile service client in your client code, right? There's a type called a mobile service client. You pass it your URL of your service that you created, so johngalloway.azuremobile.net. And then from that client, you can create little table proxies. So I just say get table for item, please. That's where I'm going to store my items. And then you can call insert async. You can call .were to do a query. You can call update, delete, and you just pass in the object and it does all the work for you. So in the JavaScript API, for example, you pass in a JSON object, and once you insert that item, the service is going to take care of kind of funneling back the ID onto the object. So once you've done the insert, if you just wait for that change to come in, we'll update the object for you with your new ID, so you don't have to worry about IDs, which is a great point to talk about another thing. So we have a SQL database. And we think SQL's great, and because it's relational. It's the thing with mobile services as well, is it's your SQL database. We don't kind of own it, right? It's your SQL database in Azure. You can connect to that to do your business intelligence, to just do any kind of reporting or run scripts or do data transformations, whatever you like. It's just your SQL database. We just connect to it and put data in and out of it using the mobile service API. But we did find this kind of affinity when we were doing our conception of the project between mobile developers and NoSQL stores. You know, those guys had a big affinity for it. And when we pressed on that, one of the reasons was the lack of, there was just a reduced impedance to getting started. There was just this kind of zero friction to using a NoSQL store, partly because of the lack of schema. I can just throw objects in that thing and query them out, and I don't have to go and do this big upfront modeling and data modeling and creating columns. And we said, so can we get the best of both worlds here? Can we have it such that we have a relational back end, but we allow people to have this zero friction entry where they don't have to go and do upfront modeling? And so we do that. So, for example, let's say you create a table called check-ins to store location check-ins for your location app. And the first time you insert a JSON object, so let's say it's got a property of message and a property of lat and a property of lon, that will hit the mobile service. And we'll see that those columns don't exist in the database, and we'll create them for you. So we have this dynamic schematization layer. And you can turn that off at some point if you like. So you just click the off button, and we'll stop doing that, and we'll reject any dynamic schematization, which some people would want to do into production once they put their app into production. But during development, it really is a lot of fun to just be able to just sit there in my client, just keep coding away. Oh, I realize I need another column. I can just stick that column right onto my object or onto my class in C-sharp if you're C-sharp coding, throw that thing at the back end, and it's just going to add the column and infer the type for me. So it's really a key thing, actually, that we really want to do is continue to make sure that coding against mobile services is fun, making it real fun for developers.
So how does that handle things like, I mean, I understand, like, I could just remove a column through SQL.
Mm-hmm. You can also remove a column in the portal, actually. You don't have to go and do that in SQL.
Great. Okay. And then this is, in your example, I saw that you had kind of a class defined with properties, and all that's just kind of inferred. So you mentioned the JSON case, but then also C#. It's kind of your standard classes with the types, and if you want some attributes.
To control the wire format. So if you're fussy about what that, because obviously the thing's going to go over the wire is JSON.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of a canonical representation of JSON, or at least people think of it as, you know, I want my JSON to be camel case, not Pascal case, which is different to the way we do things in .NET, right? So your properties tend to be Pascal case. So you don't have to do it, but if you want to control what those properties look like when they go over the wire and when they land in the database, then you can add attributes to the C# types.
So then, you know, one other thing I've seen, I guess, NoSQL is sometimes nice for, like, structured data that's more than, like hierarchical data or that kind of thing. How would I go about doing if I've got, you know, kind of, like, if I guess it's all kind of shredded into nested tables, or, you know what I mean? Like, let's say I have a check-in that then has an address and, you know, kind of a check-in with two or three addresses or two or three friends or something.
So some hierarchy. Yeah, right now, we don't, in the preview at the moment, we don't do a lot of the shredding for you in that case. So we won't just go and fan out and put that on tables. Let's see where we go with that. We're kind of looking for feedback on whether that's really what people want or not. You're basically building an ORM then, right?
Well, and then things get a lot more complicated, right? Because
it's hard to explain, and it's not necessarily tremendous fun. So we'll see where we go with that. But I will say, actually, I've not actually had that question. I think you might be the first person since the public preview to mention that. So that's interesting, right? That people aren't shouting for that. But let's see. One of the great things about us being a service, and one of the things we did in mobile services was I mentioned startups repeatedly, and that's because so many of the people we talk to are startups. We also wanted to run mobile services like a startup. So the whole thing is sort of 9 months old, from literally it being an idea drawn on a whiteboard to shipping. And we probably would have been even quicker, but shipping a service is hard. There's just a lot of tax you pay to integrate with the billing systems, et cetera, et cetera. So we didn't spend as much time building features in that 9 months as we'd like to. So you should see the features come thick and fast from now on. And we can course correct, and we can change. And so things we're getting asked for right now are offline caching, right? Is there an offline story? Mobile devices often have patchy connectivity. Mm-hmm. The Salesforce might be out in the field. And so caching is something we're hearing people ask for a lot. So that's definitely high on our radar now. I think that's one of the great things about being a service, is being able to react. So today we don't do a lot of kind of relational stuff for you. We're not hearing heaps and heaps of feedback that that's a big problem right now, but we certainly have our ears tuned listening into that.
Yeah, from seeing, I mean, the examples, it seems like it'd be relatively easy to, you know, like in those intercept methods to just, you know, insert here, insert here. You know, I mean, you could shred things apart there.
Well, so that's one of the key things. So again, simplicity with enablement. If you want to do that, if you want to pass up a JSON hierarchy over the wire, then you can do that. And in the script, you can dismantle the JSON before it hits the database. So if you send up a really complex object to us with nested trees and arrays, the thing's going to fall over if you just let it go its own way. But in the script, you could intercept that and then start doing, if you want to write that code, you can totally do it.
Okay, so I saw a blog post from Philip, and I'm going to mess up his last name, but he's a web API blogger. So he's been writing about ASP.NET web API.
Strathweb.com.
That's it. So you know where I'm going with this. He wrote about accessing mobile services using the REST APIs directly.
Yeah.
And like I'm assuming from how you're talking about it, that really the kind of supported, encouraged way is to use the client libraries. But it seems like if you're able to access those REST APIs, then today you could access from different clients.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say that it's necessarily encouraged to use the client. I think your life's going to be easier, certainly getting started, but we're very happy for people to use the REST API. We really think of that as a composition story. So what Philip did in Strathweb is actually something we think a lot of people will do. As you know, we are going to grow over time the capabilities of mobile services. We'll take, I think of mobile services really as a thin veneer across other Azure services at the moment. So when we asked about all the requirements people had, they said they wanted authentication, they wanted structured storage, they wanted messaging to do push notifications. We kind of have all that stuff in Azure, right? So all we're doing is helping glue them together and make it very easy to use those services. And you'll see us extend that veneer over things like blob storage, and continue to take it further and further, to include more services. Now, in the meantime, whilst we're still getting there, we're very, very happy for people to compose with Zumo by adding maybe an Azure website, running web API that can do some of the tricky stuff that we make it's a little bit hard to do in mobile services today. That's a completely valid scenario, completely valid thing to do. In fact, specifically for those purposes, we provide you with a thing called a master key that is essentially a secret that you can embed in your other server code that's going to integrate with mobile services, so you can hit their REST API with full privileges. So the scripts don't execute if you don't want them to. You can turn scripts off, etc., etc. So we really, really have first class that scenario. It's something we think people will do. And what I would add as well, that the REST API for Zumo is super simple. It's kind of, we've tried to make it as obvious as it can be. It's what you would expect to be happening as you perform these operations. And we already have, someone's built an iOS client, someone's built a Windows Phone 7 client, somebody's built a Mono Touch client and a Mono Droid client and an Android client. Now, these are all unofficial, but I think it demonstrates that the REST API is pretty easy to use.
So you're writing these scripts on the back end, these little hooks, and you're, you know, fleshing out this database.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you know, that is your running production code, and you want to, you know, get that under management, you want to have it in source control, you want to be able to deploy it. So what's the story there?
I think that's a really good question, actually. So right now, you would solve that problem yourself. So I think you've pressed on one of the things we really want to try and improve in the short term, and that is to provide a great way for people to do source control for their mobile service assets. So we don't have it today, but we're working on adding that in the near term. Another thing we're very keen to add is a packaging capability where, so for example, what we find people do is they have a production site, but they're not going to actively develop on that. So they'll also have a dev mobile service, like maybe it'll be the same thing, words with Zumo_dev or something. And then when they're ready, they want to take those settings and promote them over to the production site. And right now, that would be a bit fiddly. So we definitely need to improve that. And so we're looking at ways of kind of doing packaging so I can export my mobile service and email it to John and say, hey, John, check out my mobile service, import it to your mobile service, and you can run one of these as well and take a look at the code. So we're looking at packaging. We're looking at source control. We realize those are probably slightly less than ideal right now. It's a great question.
So what's the way forward to somebody who starts to kind of hit the limits of sophistication that they can do with the mobile services? You know, they've got their like V1 and now they're taking it to the next level and they start, you know, start hitting walls. Is there a natural migration path for them to something, a more sophisticated backend for them?
So, I mean, a couple of ways we think about scale really with Zumo. There's one axis, which is complexity, which is what it sounds like you're talking about here. I think we're attacking that on two fronts. One is through composition. So you could think of Azure as being a big composition party and everybody's invited, and mobile services is just part of that. So as you start to, let's say you come up with some requirement, like you want to shred images or something that's just too hard to do in JavaScript in a short script, right? So composing with web API is a great way of doing that. Or if you find yourself having a lot of your code starting to get quite lengthy and complex, and cutting and pasting it between these scripts really isn't ideal, then again, using composition to call into your existing mobile service, I think will be a very popular way for people to go when they feel they've reached some limit. But, you know, we're in something of an arms race here. We want to unblock a lot of those scenarios as much as possible. So, I mean, everybody knows that Node is an extremely powerful server backend. And we want to unleash more and more of that power, really. So we'll add things like service operations that aren't based on CRUD. We're working on those features now. So you get the idea, where I can create an API that's more open, that isn't backed by a table, that I can just hit with a request or a post, and it's going to run some script and send a response, and there doesn't need to be a database involved anywhere. So we'll do that. We'll add the ability to run scripts on a periodic basis. So let's say you want to clean up your check-ins on every night at 2 a.m. Then we'll add a cron capability that can go and execute your JavaScript. So I think there's in the very short term, the web API composition story is a very good one, because it's so easy to talk to mobile services REST API. But also you'll see us adding more and more features, hopefully on a super quick cadence. That actually means, you know, if you start running out of ground, I'm curious why. What do we need to add to solve that? And so I'm asking for people to keep bringing feedback. I mean, I'll be brutally honest with you as well. Of course, there is another scale in terms of there's another axis in terms of scale, which is sheer size. And Azure has some great assets for hitting large scale. Now, we're currently based on SQL Azure, and we hook you up to a single SQL Azure database. And so that dependency has its constraints that are kind of passed through mobile services. I will say mobile services, the middle tier itself is just a stateless runtime. So it scales very well. You know, you can add as many of those guys as you need. And that's one thing we do offer. You get for free 10 free mobile services that you can hook up to a SQL database. And you can actually, you know, if your app gets successful, you're going to want to scale up beyond the little shared things you get. But you don't want to be sharing space on a VM with other machines. You want your own VM or your own number of VMs. And you can do that with mobile services. So you just click a slider. It's going to start to cost you a little bit of money then as well, but it's pretty competitive. And you get that dedicated compute capability. Now, as I mentioned, we'll extend the veneer of mobile services over other Azure assets over time. So things like blob storage, table storage, which, you know, supports incredibly extreme scale in terms of the number of queries you can push against that thing and the number of records that you can query, the size of the data and how much throughput you can get there. So we'll extend mobile services over that. So you'll see us just broadening and broadening the sweet spot of Zumo mobile service scenarios over time.
And as far as billing goes, is it, are you paying for the Azure resources that you use, like the compute and
yep.
database resources? And is there additional charges? Are you paying also for the mobile services stuff, or is it just what you're using in Azure?
No, I mean, billing's always open, because we'd like to explore doing some simpler things with billing. But you pay for what you use, right? So you pay the same prices. If we're running on an Azure VM, you're going to pay the same as you would pay to run on an Azure VM. You know, you just pay for what you use, literally. So we actually run on the same infrastructure as Azure websites. So I don't know if you're familiar with Azure websites, but they have a shared hosting model. So they give you, I think it's 10 free websites for free. And we give 10 free websites for free. And people are exploring whether there's something in between shared free and paid reserved. Is there this kind of shared paid where I get a little bit more because I don't want to quite pay for a full VM yet? And we'll follow those and track with those guys. And you're basically paying for using the underlying infrastructure. We kind of don't charge you to use the mobile service.
So for right now, then, while it's in preview, it's completely free. Is that true?
You can pay. So if you want to, it's completely free for your 10 free mobile services. But you can actually, even during the preview now, if you want to scale up, you can do that. And okay. We do find people are doing this. You know, people are willing to hook up to a full VM, even in these early stages.
Are you able to talk about any examples of anyone that's using it?
No, we do have some. Yeah, I can only sort of blow our ear and say we have some very high profile customers who are very interested.
Sure.
Which is interesting, because it's not sort of what we were expecting, right? We weren't expecting high profile customers. It wasn't our target. But we do have some high profile customers who are very interested, just because it's going to save them so much time, right? So the scenarios fit pretty well with us, and they're like, well, that's going to save us a bunch of development. And you guys provide the reliability and high availability, but I can't name any names right now. We did have someone announce on Twitter that I think we have our first app in the store already, which is sort of incredulous, really. Would You Rather, it's called. So it looks like a fun app by a guy called Patrick. It took him 6 days to build his app. He just posted a blog post about this, actually, and says it's thanks to mobile services that he could do this so quick.
I'm wondering, since Node is sort of near and dear to my heart, is there anything you can tell us about why you guys picked Node as your backend and any of your experiences with it?
We've had a very positive experience with Node. I think originally when we designed mobile services, we were kind of technology implementation agnostic. We had no assumption that we were going to build in any particular language. Now, there's a couple of things actually. So the runtime that runs mobile services is written in Node, is Node code that hosts those scripts that you write. So we basically plug those in. We have a mechanism for plugging those in. But that runtime code is probably only 30% of the system. The rest of the system is the thing that runs and manages the service and handles all the calls coming from the portal, and that's actually all .NET code and web API code. But Node became a very natural choice for us. I mean, there's a couple of things Node's great at, right? It's great at handling I/O and event-driven behavior. Everybody knows that. It's nice for that. I think the main reason was actually because we liked JavaScript as a choice for mobile services. Because, remember, we're not just doing Windows 8 apps. We're going to be going cross-platform. So we're going to be supporting people coding in Objective-C in iOS. We're going to be supporting people coding in Java on Android. We're going to be supporting people writing JavaScript in WinJS. And if we had just had to pick one language to start with, we've not ruled out providing other languages that you could write in the server, then JavaScript seems like a very natural choice for that. It's very universal. And the other thing is, these things are typically quite small scripts. And so for writing small scripts, JavaScript's pretty awesome at that. So JavaScript as a choice felt very natural for our server script programming model. That was the first decision. And then Node was it just kind of makes sense.
Is there any kind of like sandbox or way to work on things locally? Like if I want to test things without running against the full server, I guess I could just have like a dev instance or something. But say I want to run some tests or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't have that capability right now to run locally. We are seeing a couple of people ask for that, but I will say it's people who are thinking about using it and not the people who are using it. So that's right. Interesting. I know there's a lot of people out there who are really into testing and might think that would be useful. And I think they're probably right. So we're certainly looking at ways that to enable that scenario. Now, we like to think differently in mobile services. Maybe we can provide a really great way for you to put your test in the cloud, right? Maybe there's some way we can do some really interesting stuff to make testing great in mobile services, and it works up in the sky and you can debug in the sky. To answer your question today, no, we're exploring all avenues for the future.
Okay. And then, so I've got a big app and I've got a lot of users banging on it at once. And I'm assuming that, even if you're guarding against everything, if I'm writing my own scripts, I may have some kind of contention against, like two people are trying to update one shared thing at the same time or that kind of thing. Is that just kind of not possible, or is that something that my app code handles?
Yeah, so we've got a number of features we're looking to add. So one is to kind of bake into the client optimistic concurrency support so that you can kind of, with a Boolean switch, maybe say, I just want to insert this with a last right wins semantic. Like if there's two racing inserts, hey, they can go for it. Another is to say, no, I want to get a failure if this thing's been updated since I loaded the data, right? So you get some kind of optimistic concurrency, very similar to the way blobs work with preconditions and e-tags. Another thing is we're using SQL, so we want to enable people to think about transactions in the scripts and maybe even sending batch changes from the client that would be updated transactionally. Because that's one of the great things about having your data in a SQL database is when you're working in that database, you can have local transactions in that DB, which is pretty powerful. So we actually focused initially on a lot of consumer scenarios, and there wasn't tremendous demand for this kind of feature. I mean, it's interesting. It might seem obvious to veteran developers that, yeah, this is really, really important. And it is, and we'll totally go there and we'll add it. But we also find that, I mean, if you take a lot of the people working in the NoSQL world, this isn't a big thing they're concerned about right now. It's kind of mute because we're going to add options to make this really sing, really make the best of SQL Azure's transactional capability, and also provide a really nice way to do optimistic concurrency on the client.
Right. But like you're saying, for most cases, I mean, in most things I could think of that are kind of a mobile, or, you've already got things where it's kind of segmented to one user is working on their things.
Yep. It doesn't rear its head as much. I mean, it's not, you wouldn't build a banking system in it without this kind of support, of course. But there's an awful lot of scenarios where this is great. And we're going to stretch to reach all of those other scenarios in short time as well.
What kind of visibility does a developer have into what's happening on the server? Like my app's running, it starts getting slow for some reason. Like, how do I figure out what's going on?
Yeah, so we have, as with all of the services in Azure, actually, we have this dashboard, which has real-time monitoring information. So you can see it updates super quickly. So within a few seconds of a request, that'll be updated on the dashboard. You'll see that you can see your requests, and you see a graph over time that shows, you know, how many requests you had over the last 24 hours, over the last 7 days, or over the last 6 hours. We also show you how much CPU that was computing. So if your CPU is getting pretty high on that barrier, then it's time to maybe switch to two VMs or switch to from shared free to a paid model because you're starting to drive enough traffic. We also show you how much egress you're using over time, etc. We're actually going to add more and more to that dashboard. So it's very exciting being a service that can add these features. You should see them light up very near. We'll be able to show you how many push notifications you send. I'm open to people sending me suggestions here for what else they'd like to see on the dashboard, but you can imagine how many inserts, how many updates, how many deletes. It shouldn't be too hard for us to add that kind of thing and give you real-time visibility. Today, we show you CPU, API calls, and the amount of data that's passing out of the service.
And then you mentioned, you know, some of the controls that I have within there if I want to turn something off or turn something on. Are there any interesting little additional features that we haven't mentioned yet that are in the portal that I can, you know, tweak how my mobile app's running?
So I'm trying to think of an example. To configure an application to work with other services. So I mentioned that we work with Windows Notification Service to make sending push notifications really easy. The Windows Notification Services are awesome. They're very powerful. But there's a few, you know, there's quite a bit of code to write to light that up. And we've made it one line of code because we just ask you for two settings, basically your client secret and your package SID. And from that point, you're good to send push notifications. So you get that information from Windows Notification Services, you enter it into our portal, and you are good to go. And the same with identity, you know, because we use Windows Live today, we'll add other identity providers in near term. We need something from Windows Live so that we can authenticate the Windows Live token. You know, we're going to make an exchange with those servers, so we need a secret from you that you get from Windows Live. So you enter all those into the portal. That's one example. Other things you can change is you can actually... So we point to a database, right? We point to a database that you tell us about that's in the Azure system. And when you create a new mobile service, we can connect to an existing database if you already have one, or we can guide you through the process of creating a new one. And you get a database with the free trial of Azure as well. So getting started with mobile services is free with zero commitment. But you can actually change that database at any point and almost VIP swap out the back end if you want. So if you, this is really useful if you've been taking backups and you want to restore to a different point in time, then you can get that database all up and good. Go to the change DB function and point your mobile service in an instant to another database. So you can fiddle with things like that. You'll see us add more and more sliders and switches over time. But right now, those are the main ones. One thing we're keen on, of course, is to keep it simple. That's a core ethos of mobile services, is keeping it simple. So we take a bleak eye to over-configuration. But we will be adding, there's a couple of cool new things we'll be adding to the portal over time that will allow you to do some cool stuff.
So then is this, this feels very much like Azure Websites. And I believe you said that it's basically, it's either running on it or it's very closely related.
Yeah, when we decided, I explained earlier what during the envisioning of the project, that we wanted people to be able to write code on the server. But we also didn't want to make people pay for a full virtual machine. And so how can we get people access to a free mobile service or a number of free mobile services and write code that isn't going to go and do bad stuff to the other guy's code, right? You know, you don't want one piece of code running on a VM creeping out of its sandbox and doing something bad. And that's a really tricky problem to solve. It's very, very difficult to do that. Now, we were fortunate in terms of a partner team here in Azure had kind of solved this problem or was working on solving this problem at exactly that time. And that's the infrastructure that runs Azure Websites. So we went over to those guys and said, look, we're thinking of doing this, but we kind of need, to make this a success, we need the capabilities that you guys are building to give us that sandboxing if we want to run in a shared environment. And sure enough, they came up with the goods. And so we actually run, we don't run on the public Azure Websites infrastructure that you see now. We have our own. And that's because we can fine tune it, because we know an awful lot about all our apps. They're all the same. They're all running Node, and, you know, so we understand the memory profile and the I/O profile. So we can really fine tune that guy and pack even more on, et cetera, et cetera. So that was key to us being able to do what we wanted to do, actually. The Azure Websites infrastructure was a key enabler to mobile services. Without that, I'm not sure what we'd look like today. That was probably our biggest hurdle to overcome, was solving the sandboxing of user code, which inherently can't be trusted by other users' codes, and so that we can provide it was something we had to do from the outset. We had to let people play with this stuff for free. And that was a really key goal for us. We knew that would be important. And so that's how we did it.
So can you talk even at a high level technically? Like, I'm sure I am definitely, and any of our listeners would be wondering, like, how do you go about doing that? Because there are a lot of things in server-side code where you don't get... That seems rather complex. It seems like an interesting problem.
It is, and I'm glad we didn't have to solve it. But we have some very, very smart engineers here in the Azure team. Some of the guys who built IIS, so, you know, they're really into the low-level stuff. They put together... And actually, the Azure OS team as well worked on this. You know, they put together the essentially a new, how could I put it? It's kind of like IIS on steroids, and it provides the isolation guarantees. I mean, I know some of the complexities, but I don't want to go into them in case I get them wrong. But they've, as you can imagine, they've invested a tremendous amount in making sure that stuff is secure and rock solid. But basically, the key thing is it allows me to have multiple isolated processes running on a single VM. And the work's been done ahead of time to make sure that those processes can't intercommunicate, are completely locked down, and sandboxed. And that's where the real smart guys came in and did, you know, there's a lot of low-level stuff in there to make sure that that is completely rock solid. And that's a big thing, and that's why we were super happy that someone had come in before us and kind of solved that problem. And they were just finishing up as we were getting started, so it was great. It's like, yeah, here you've got this thing going on, and we want to solve this problem. And we're like, can we use this? And they were like, yeah, sure, of course. The more the merrier. So we just partied on that. It's a pretty complicated piece of tech, but, you know, it's a superb implementation. It adds no latency, provides that same infrastructure as providing us with the real-time monitoring capability. So it's very, very powerful.
So that brought up and then I think answered another question I had, which is, I understand if I'm scaling, I could go from shared to reserved.
Yeah.
But I couldn't run multiple instances, I believe, because they are sandboxed and they wouldn't talk with each other and I wouldn't be able to keep my data in sync.
Well, that's not necessarily true. You could just think of each process as being like a separate server, but a very small server.
Ah.
So really, it's just a question of scaling out, right? So if your app's stateless and scales, then that isn't a problem. You can't tell the difference between it being a very small machine, which isn't really a machine, and it being a machine. It just has less resources available to it.
Gotcha.
So you can have 10 of those, or 20 of them, or 300, or 4,000, and you still scale.
Great. Okay, so I could go to reserved and then spin up as many as I wanted.
Reserved, actually, you do actually get a dedicated VM. So in that case, the sandboxing doesn't really apply. So
right, much, right.
Because
okay.
You get natural sandboxing of the VM infrastructure that Azure provides. But as we look to explore options in between VM and shared free, then sliding that slider of shared instances might become something that's interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've covered things pretty well. I think one obvious, you know, question is how can people get started if they're interested? How do you start using this?
Yeah. So if you already have an Azure subscription, then you can add the preview feature. Now, what I would do is I would go to aka.ms/mobile-services. We'll put that link in the write-up with the post. We have instructions there on how to add it. So just click on the start, the tutorial, and it'll guide you through the process of adding the preview feature. If you don't have an Azure account, then you can sign up for a free trial. And it's a completely no-commitment free trial. I think it lasts for 3 months, but the Azure Mobile Services part of it will be free. We guarantee it'll be free for as long as we run the preview. Let's see what happens after that. We're working on it. So if you want to go and try this stuff out, aka.ms/mobile-services, hit that thing, sign up for the free trial and try it out. And here's the thing. So one of the things we really wanted to focus on in mobile services is we want everybody who hits the homepage of our management portal within 5 minutes. So I'm asking your listeners to take the 5 minute quick start challenge. Within 5 minutes, they should have an app working against a mobile service deployed to Azure. So when you do new mobile service, it's about 15 seconds it takes, something maybe even less, and you will have something live in Azure. So we're not talking like minutes or, you know, or many minutes for this thing to go live. It's live right away. And when you change scripts and press save, that thing is live in seconds. So you can, the experience of debugging and playing with this is tremendous fun. And we actually have this thing in the portal called a quick start. And the quick start allows you to connect to an existing application, or actually you can download an app. And the app isn't just a generic sample. It's actually been bootstrapped to contain the code to connect to the mobile service you just created. And it has all the code in there. And that's a really great way to start. So it's a to-do list application. You can go in there then and start adding tables and playing with it. And we even have a bunch of tutorials that have you adding authentication and push. But the quick start challenge is a call out to your listeners to get onto Azure, go and create a new mobile service, do the create new in quick start. You'll be finished in minutes. And I think you'll like it. I hope you love it. And I'd love to hear from all reactions.
And on that cloud cover you were on, I saw you win a beer from Nick Harris when you did this in, I think, 2 minutes and 3 seconds from basically to create and run the application. And you were explaining and answering questions the whole way through.
Oh, yeah. You can do it in a minute. You really can do it in a minute. And I was talking all the way through that. And I think I was cheered by the RNC, which was...
You were.
As a Brit, that was something of a surprise, I have to say. No, that was great fun. Yeah, 2 minutes 3, you have a scurry recall there, John. That's exactly right.
Well, it was an impressive feat. So, you know, it stands out.
Cool.
Well, all right. Thanks a bunch, Josh. This is very interesting. And as you said, you mentioned a lot of links, and we'll be sure to get those in the notes. So, I believe you have 12 minutes before you're going to be talking to our friends in China, yep, including Mr. Glenn Block. So
that's right.
Say hello for us.
I will.
All right. Okay. Thanks a bunch. And we'll be talking to you again on Herding Code.
Thanks very much.